Welcome to another message from LifePoint Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on LifePoint Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community. And now, today's message.
Good to be back to Valley Center. It's been many years now that since we've been here, and you've been faithful and good to help the work in Bangladesh for all these years. Let me explain about this stool here that I borrowed for this morning. I've had some challenges health wise, and we went to see the doctor. Was it this week or last week? Anyway, not long ago, and everything was good. He took the blood and all that, and then went through the blood, and all my numbers were great, to the point I had to ask him, how about the one about the cancer? And he said, oh, it's almost like you don't have it, have never had it at all. And so, hallelujah for that, huh? So, just in case there's a problem, because sometimes I feel a little bit weak, I may have to sit down. Don't panic. Please don't call 911, okay? I was in a church where they did that, okay, because I got a little bit lightheaded and didn't have the seat right there, and so don't call 911, please, all right, because it's more hassle than you want to deal with this morning. Church will be finished at that point if they come, so please, let's just don't do that, because as long as I can sit down, I'll be okay. Great to be with you. Glad to be with you. This morning, I'm going to do something that I've never done before, and I've been doing this for many, many years. We went out to Bangladesh in 1979, so that tells you something about my age and all those things. You know, if you're going to live this long, you've got to be somewhere, and God called us to Bangladesh, and that's where we've been since 1979. We arrived then with Sharon and our three kids. And I've been there ever since. And God called us there very, very clearly. Very, very clearly. I'm sure of a few things. I'm sure my name, Larry Smith, it sounds like a bogus name anyway. But anyway, I'm sure of my name. And I'm sure that I love Sharon. And I'm sure God called me to Bangladesh. I'm sure as I can possibly be. And he's kept us there all this time. You know, when God calls, it's not a horrible thing. Sometimes we make the call of God so mysterious and difficult, but it's not that at all. It's the joy of our life. You know, don't you ever feel sorry for us that because God called us to Bangladesh. If you know anything about Bangladesh, it's been one of the poorest countries in the world. They're doing better these days, but it's been one of the poorest countries of the world and one of the most populous and the most densely populated country in the world. We have 170 million people in a place the size of Arkansas. Can you imagine that? Maybe not, huh? Just kind of get a map in your mind. Got that? Go down to New Orleans, draw a line straight up, take everybody west, okay? Everybody west. Don't forget Alaska. Don't forget Hawaii, all right, because they're a part of us too. And you got all those people there. Now put them in a place the size of Arkansas, and that's what it's like in Bangladesh. So we have people. But that's what makes it one of the greatest challenges in the world, because we have so many people that are basically lost. Very, very, very few Christians that are there. When we went out in 1979, we had maybe five churches of the Assemblies of God. And then because of almost a disaster, really, that happened a few months later, someone had to leave the country. And when they left the country, the ministries were left. And they had been dealing with some young men and had been taking them out of the village areas and preaching and trying to start churches and those kinds of things. And so when that person, the one person left that was in charge of those ministries left, they had seven guys that needed to go somewhere. And so the Bangladesh Assemblies of God decided, okay, we'll send them to all these places. And so we went from 5 to 12 just overnight because they sent those guys out. They weren't ready to pastor. They weren't ready to do hardly anything. But God used them, and some of them are presbyters today. And so God's blessed. Today we don't have five churches like we did in 1979. We don't have 12 churches like we had in just a few years after that. Today we have almost 500 churches in Bangladesh. And so God's been blessing in the country. Still not the kind of growth that we need. Pastor was talking about a meeting that we have every year. We don't have it. The Muslims have it. It's called the Bordo Istima. And the Istima is a meeting. It's like an evangelistic meeting for Muslims. And they gather together, and it's not tens of thousands, it's millions. We have some 4 to 6 million people, 2 weekends, each weekend, 4 to 6 million people, and just masses and masses of people. And they go and to this one place and gather together, and they're there to get a blessing somehow. And so masses of people that we need to reach still. So we're not done yet. We still need to do the work that God has called us to, and we're overjoyed to be there. The thing that I'm going to do this morning that I don't normally do is I'm going to talk about money. Okay? Now, a close friend of mine, he used to tease me and say, "Oh, you're a moochinary." Well, that was sort of derogative, that he was saying. He was saying, "All you ever do is ask for money." Well, the truth is, we really never did ask for money, and I want to share some of that with you this morning. But it's going to be a different way of talking about money. So please don't panic yet, okay, Pastor? Don't panic. We're going to be okay. We haven't talked about any of this. I didn't want to put fear in his heart before we got started. So anyway. I want to start out with a scripture that I've always enjoyed. If I can find it here real quick, it's in Psalms 37, verse 25, and it says, "I have been young, and now I am old, and I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor God's seed begging for bread." God is good. He supplies. Friends, He is your God. You are His people, and He has promised to provide for us. I don't know what your cases may be, but I'm a little suspicious that maybe some people are going through some difficult things because of the COVID thing, and maybe finances or jobs or some of those things. But God is good. He's the eternal God. He's the God of everything. He's powerful. And He takes care of His people. And so this talking about money that I want to talk about today isn't about me. It's about God and how good He is and how well He takes care of us, and that we need to not be afraid, but to trust Him. He's a good and mighty God. Many years ago, and you got to understand, we've been there since 1979, so clear back to the beginnings of all of this. One day I was sitting in my office. I had an office at that time, and I was sitting in my office, and I looked up, and a man had just walked through my door. Now, you got to understand, I had an office, one of the very few missionaries, in fact, the only missionary that sat in that evangelistic center there in Dhaka, and so I was there, and somehow he walked in, and immediately I could tell this must be a beggar. We have beggars everywhere in Bangladesh because the people are very, very poor there, and at that time even worse. And so I saw this man, and I wish I would. This isn't going to make me look too good, okay? So just stand there with me, okay? Just forgive me here. But it was a busy day, and this man, he looks like a beggar, and my first instinct was, who let him in? Who let this man in? That meant he had to come through the gate that we have at that evangelistic center. He got past the guards that are at the gate. Yeah, we have guards at the gate there to keep people kind of like that out. He came through the building up to the second floor where my office was. Got past the two secretaries. I had two secretaries, one for money and one for correspondence. Got past them somehow, and he's standing there in my office. And so because he looked like a beggar, I thought, well, I know what he wants. He wants money. And so I was willing to give him a little bit. sometimes we give them a little bit, like I said, this doesn't make me look good, just to get rid of them, okay? And so he was standing there, and so I was trying to be as kind as I could be, but I was impatient, you know, why did he get here, and what's he doing, and what's he want? And I thought I knew what he wanted, but he never did ask for money, never did. And I said, how can I help you? And he said, he began to tell me his story. And his story was that he'd come from up north. He said that he was a Christian, but I'm sure that he was probably a nominal Christian. In Bangladesh, you're either Muslim, Hindu, Christian, and that's about it. And this is very, very clear cut, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're practicing people or really, really believers in any of those religions. They're sort of open, really, which is okay because that means people are open to the gospel, and if you approach it right, they'll listen to you. And so he said he'd come from up north, and his wife had just given birth to their third child. At the birth of their third child, the wife died, leaving him with two little kids and a brand new baby. And he said, brother, what am I going to do? And inside of me, I'm not thinking good thoughts at all. I'm thinking, well, how's that my problem? And he said, what am I going to do? He says, I've got a job. He says, but I can't work because somebody has to watch the baby. And I could understand that. And so he said, you know, if I stay home to watch the baby, then we'll all die. He says, what do I do? And so I really didn't have anything to do. I was still pretty young with all this, hadn't experienced much. And I knew that our stated policy with the mission that was ever before we got there was that we didn't do the kinds of ministries that were beyond preaching and teaching. And that was it. And so I knew that we with the Assemblies of God at that time, didn't do those kind of ministries. And so what are we going to do? How am I going to help this man? And I said, well, how can I help you? And he said something that I really wasn't expecting. He said, brother, take my baby. I wasn't expecting that in my busy day in our ministry center where we don't do anything but preach and teach. And I said, well, you know, I don't think we can do that. And he said, well, brother, what am I going to do? Well, I don't know. So I called a staff member in, and we got on the phone and called several places around town that did that kind of ministry, and nobody could take that baby. And so finally, after a couple of hours of dealing with that, finally got to the place where, I'm sorry, we have no answer. I reached in my wallet, pulled out the little bit of money that was there, and gave it to him. It wasn't much, but it could get him through maybe the next week or so. And I gave it to him. At that, he didn't say anything. Bengalis typically don't say anything. They won't say thank you much. And he didn't say anything. He just kind of bowed his head, and you could tell he was dejected because he hadn't gotten what he needed from us. And didn't say anything. He walked out of my office, down the hall of our ministry center, down the stairs, and past the offices where several ministries go on in that particular place, and across the hall down below us, because my office was just above the exit of the building, and out the door. He didn't know that I was standing in the window of my office looking out, because I knew that he would be coming out below me, because that's where the exit was. And I was standing there thinking, what just happened? And I felt like just a fool. I didn't know what to do. And here a man came for my help, and I don't have any help to give him. And we're against that kind of thing as far as the ministry that that our mission was doing at that time. And then I saw him walk out below me slowly over to the gate, stood there for a moment. You could tell he didn't know where he was going to go. He didn't know what to do because we'd called all the people, all the places. And then slowly he walked out of our ministry center there. I don't know what happened to that man. I don't know what happened to those three children. I have no idea. I've never seen him since. I do know what happened to me. I stood there in that window with my hand on the little thing that was in front of me there, weeping and saying, God, this isn't fair. A man comes in here and I haven't helped him at all. Haven't hardly helped him at all. What can I possibly do? And I determined there, standing in that window, watching that man leave our compound, I said, God, I don't understand what or when or how, but if I ever have a chance, we're going to do something about this. And that's when I got determined to go against the odds, to go against mission policy and all those things, and say, God, we got to be able to help people like that. Friends, ministry takes money. You didn't build this place here without money. Sometimes we get the idea that missionaries or pastors or people that are preachers or whatever, they're in it for the money. But friends, that's not usually the case, not really. If there's anything I know about preachers, they face challenges financially all the time. And friends, this is not your pastor's church. It's not your pastor's church. It's your church. It's your church. And we've got to do as much as we can to be the bright and shining light for Valley Center. We have to be. And who's that going to be? It's going to be all of us. It's up to us. But it takes finances to do that. And so if you have a problem with some of that, please understand what happens. The tithe is God's tithe. It doesn't belong to the pastor. Yes, his salary is taken for that. But the tithe goes to the work of God here in Valley Center to have chairs, to have carpets, to have all the different things, to have the daily operation, to have a children's pastor, all those things. It takes finances. And we've got to deal with that somehow. And sometimes missionaries get a bad rap that we're only there for money. And quite honestly, if churches like this don't support the work of God in different countries, we don't do those works. It depends on what people like you do. It depends on what our vision is. Do we have a vision for the world? Do we have a vision for the lost? We need to have a vision for the lost. But to do those things, we've got to have God's help. And God's help comes through God's people. And so please, let's get a clear understanding of that. Now, we were in Bangladesh, like I said, our first term, and we had four-year terms, and then we would come home for a year. Things have changed for us a little bit now. We're 2 years, and then we're back home for 4 months, so we're only here till about February or so. And in that time, we're given the opportunity to raise funds to do the different ministries that God has given. And it's a challenge. It truly is a challenge, because where does it come from? We'd been in Bangladesh for the first 4 years, our first term, and we'd seen a lot. We'd seen things like this man with a baby and several other things, difficult things. And it's like, God, what can we possibly do? If we had a little bit more money, we could do a little bit more. And I began to get a little bit irritated about some of this, and it was wrong, and I had to work through that, and God's helped me through that. But it's like, I know of a church, and I won't tell you where, because you might know the place and all that. I knew a church here in the States that was building a youth center, and they were trying to raise $1 million for the youth center, and yet they only had 12 youth. And I thought, God, that's not fair. If they can raise $1 million in the United States for a youth center with 12 young people, can't we do something about the millions upon millions upon millions of people? God, we've got to be able to do something. And we were getting ready to come back home for our first furlough. And I was ready. I was ready to come to pulpits like this and say, we need this much money, and if we can raise money for $1 million for a youth center for 12, can we raise money to reach Bangladesh? And I was ready to do that. Now I'm going to be talking about an underlying theme that goes along with what I'm talking about here today, and that is God spoke to me. Okay, you got to be careful when you hear people say, God spoke to me. Any pastor alive has heard those words, God spoke to me. Well, did he? And yes, he does speak. But sometimes you're not sure if that's God speaking or the pizza from last night speaking. You're not sure. And so you got to be a little bit careful. And so I invite you to judge me and look for yourself and hear for yourself whether or not God spoke to me, okay? Because that's going to come up a few times here in the next few minutes. But during that time, as I was ready to come back to go to all the churches of Kansas and anywhere else they would have me, I was ready to raise as much money as I could possibly raise and go back and start a Bible school and start youth ministries and all kinds of things. I was ready to go back. I was ready to do it. And during that time, as I was preparing to come back to the States, God spoke to me. Okay, like I said, judge me. Go ahead. God spoke to me. But the thing he spoke to me was this. He spoke to me and he said, when you go back to the States, to those churches, you can't say anything about money. Have you ever been ticked at God? I was ticked off at God. You know, what? I'm going to go back where the land of money. And it was back during the days in the churches prosperity gospel. Thank you. This is my brain here. This is my memory here. If she doesn't have it, it's on her phone, and she can find it, believe me. The prosperity gospel was a big thing at that time, and everywhere you went, it's the prosperity gospel. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Here this is, and God's not allowing me to get anything out of this. He's not allowing me to say anything about money. And so, okay, fine, great. And so I didn't know what he was going to do, but he was going to do something. So we came back to the States and went to a few services here and there, and I couldn't say a thing about money. And yet that's what we're supposedly doing, is raising funds to go do the work in Bangladesh. And so I can't do that. So about the third or fourth week into being back in the States and going to different services, nothing was going on. We were not raising money. And by the way, we had to, you know, the headquarters, the Assembly of God World Missions sets our budget. They set a budget for us because of their experience and all those different things they know. And so they set our budget, and our budget was time and a half again what we would raise the first time, and we had half the time to do it. Plus we had a project, and the project was $50,000. And the burden of all of that was on me. And I felt it, believe me, especially when God's not allowing me to say a thing about the projects and about the different anything. He didn't allow me to say anything through that. Well, about in the third or fourth week into it, on a Wednesday night, I was in Texas, okay, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and the church was a church that I had been to the first time we itinerated back before we'd been to the field, and when I was trying to find it, I couldn't find the church, and I was desperate, running all over the north part or the south part of the Dallas area, and I couldn't find the church. And finally, I just happened to see up above in a higher level some car lights. And I thought, well, I wonder if that's the church. And so I went up there, and sure enough, there was a church. But by this time, I'd been running around trying to find this church all over the place. Couldn't find it. And finally found it, and I was like 5 minutes before church was supposed to start. And I ran into the church, found the pastor, and I said, here I am. I'm sorry to be late. And he looked at me like, who are you? He'd forgotten that I was coming. And so here I am, and he said, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, he forgot to put it on his, you know, calendar or whatever it was. He says, I'm so sorry. He says, we have a choir that's going to be here, and I can't give you the service, but I can give you 5 minutes. And so they gave me 5 minutes. And I did my best to tell them about Bangladesh. Didn't say a word about money, not one word. And, you know, took the 5 minutes, sat down, listened to the choir, had a good time. And this was a friend of his with the choir, and so he went with his friend afterwards out to eat and said goodbye to me. and so I said goodbye to him. A few weeks later, found out that they were going to pick us up for monthly support. And it was $50 a month. And at that time, $50 a month was a very good monthly support. It really was for a church like that. And so, great, wonderful. Okay, so then, this time coming back from our first furlough, I was going to go to that church on a Wednesday night. The pastor picked me up at the hotel, and a long road from the hotel. It was on the same road as his church was, but a long road that went down and went up. And the pastor was so excited about what was going on in his church and all those things, and he said, see up there at the top of the hill? He said, see on the left-hand side? Yeah. He said, well, that's a building that we built in whatever date it was, and he said, it seats 650 people. And I thought, wow, 650 people in 4 years' time. And for great facilities and all that, he told me about it. 650 people, that's how many they seated. And then he drew my attention to the other side of the road. And he said, these are the buildings we built since then. The church ran 2,000 people. And they were all in these buildings, and all in 4 years. I was just dumbstruck. He took me to the church and saw all those facilities and all the things that were there. Millions of dollars worth. Millions. And had the service and did my best on a Wednesday night to preach as much as I could about missions without talking about money. And did okay. And after the service, he said, look, he said, we usually get together with the staff and go to my house and have a time of get together on a Wednesday night. And he said, would you like to come over? And so, sure, I was in his car anyway, so I didn't have much choice, really. And so, sure, yeah, great, let's do that. So he drove me over to his house, a beautiful home. You know, I have no idea how much it cost, but it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm sure. Beautiful home. And first time I'd ever seen cable TV was in his house. And there it all was, and the staff were there, and I was just so out of it. I just came from Bangladesh, one of the poorest countries in the world, and now I'm into one of the richest churches in the world, it seems like, or at least in the Assemblies of God. And it's like, what on earth? And we finally closed what we were doing there that night, and he drove me back to the hotel. And on the way back from the hotel, I said, David, how? How did all of this happen? How? He said, look, he said, God spoke to us, and to do the things that we needed to do, we needed finances. He said, and how do you raise the kind of finances that we need for this kind of thing? And I had no clue. And he told me tonight's offering was $16,000. That's kind of like your Wednesday night, isn't it? $16,000. He said, look, he said, we found that the things that God was telling us to do, we didn't have the funds to do it. So we got a group together like this group that was here tonight. He said, and we went to a time of special prayer. We didn't tell the whole church. We didn't tell anybody else. We just, this group of about 12, 15 people prayed specifically about the finances. And he said, from that time, there's one man that somehow got a burden. They didn't tell him anything about the needs, anything about that. But because of the prayer and God moving on this man's heart, this one man dropped a check in every once in a while, a few times, for $10,000. Well, $10,000 is, not bad. That's what you get on a Sunday night too, isn't it? Anyway, $10,000. And he said tonight was one of those nights. And so $16,000, where's the other $6,000 from? Well, it was the missionary offering. Thank God. We hadn't said anything to him about money. He didn't ask us about money. But somehow we walked away from there with $6,000. God supplied. He supplied. And that was one of the first wake-up calls. But it still wasn't nearly enough for the $50,000 project and the monthly support that was there. When he told me that they had a special time of prayer, it was like a dagger going in my heart, because I knew that I hadn't been really praying about this much. Friends, God is more interested in your condition, your situation, than you are. You got to understand that God loves you more than you love you. Do you love yourself? No offense, friends, but I love myself, don't you? Don't you love yourself? And God loves us more than that. And he takes care of us. He does. Well, it was a little bit later, another week or two, and all of what had happened back in Texas kind of concerned me, and I said, God, what do you want me to do? And I don't like to copy what other people do, because you're just trying to make sure that whatever they did happens for you and doesn't necessarily work like that. Let God speak to you. God can speak, and he can speak clearly to you. Let him do that. And so I don't like to copy, but this seemed almost like a copy. I decided, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to contact some of the closest people to me that I can think of. And so it was family members, Sharon's parents and brothers and my family members and close friends, my roommate in Bible school. So about 12 of some of the closest people that no matter what we did, they would know the truth, what our motives were and all those things. And so I wrote up a letter, told them, this is the situation. We got time and a half to raise as we did the first time, half the time to do it, $50,000 project, and nothing's coming in. Nothing is coming in that will begin to even dent this, except for that $6,000. That was a good thing. And so I had that letter in the back of my car and had set aside a month's time to pray about this particular need. And the beginning time of that was the next Sunday. Well, the next Sunday I was in Cherryvale, Kansas. Anybody know where Cherryvale, Kansas is? It's about 125 miles southeast of here. Okay, that's where Cherryvale, Kansas is. And that's where my Sunday morning service was. And so got there the night before. My son Luke was 6 years old at that time. And we decided it was kind of the summertime, and he wouldn't have a chance to do this any other time because he would have to go to school and all that. But we decided, okay, Luke's going to go with Dad itinerating. So Luke was with me, and we loaded up our Datsun car thing that we had and station wagon, and Luke and I went off to Cherryvale, Kansas, and we got down there and went over to the Walmart that's someplace in some other city. I forgot which city it went, but we went over there and came back, and by the time we came back, it was raining. And it rained all night, hard rain, and all night long. And when we got up the next morning, Cherryvale was flooded. And there was close to the motel, there was an overbridge for trains. Those kind of overbridges that goes over a road. So that's what that was like. And I looked out, and underneath that bridge was just water. And I thought, oh my, this looks like it's going to be a problem. So I called the pastor and told him what the situation was, and told him, I'm not sure if I can get to the church, because it's flooded here. And he says, oh, yeah. He said, the whole county is flooded. And he said, look, I've got somebody with a four-wheel vehicle, and I'll send him over to you, and he'll help you get here. And so he did that. And while he was sending somebody over, then I was going to load up our Datsun. I opened up the front front door, the driver's side. It was like a cartoon. Opened it up, and water came gushing out of my car all over my legs, the bottom part of my legs and my feet. What had happened was I had parked as clearly underneath the overhang as I could possibly park, and the water came right through those vents in the front of the car. Part of it went inside the car, and that was the water that came splashing out. And the other part went into the engine, and the whole engine was wet. And so after I got to the place I could actually try to get the car started, it wouldn't start at all. Called the pastor back and said, look, the four-wheeled vehicle's not here yet, and I can't drive my car, and I didn't think I would be able, but I can't. And he said, well, that's okay, the guy's coming. So he took me over there. I was soaked to the skin because it was still just pouring down rain, just hard rain, and I was getting all of our stuff in and Luke in and all those things and trying to get the car started, and they wouldn't start. And the guy showed up with a four-wheel vehicle, and I got in the car, and he took me over to the church. And like I said, I was just wet, just completely soaked. Everything was soaked. I've got that kind of hair. It's very, very fine that when it gets wet, it kind of just clings to my head, you know? And so I went into the bathroom there at the church and got the paper towels and tried to fluff it up to make it look like I had hair and did my best. And by the time I got through all that, Sunday school was over. And I always usually try to get to Sunday school if they have Sunday school. And so I missed that. And by that time, the church was ready to start. And so we went out ready to start, and they had me come up on the platform. That's just the way they did it at that place. And so I sat there freezing. They had the air conditioner on, and I was cold, just wet, soaked to the skin, and cold, freezing on that platform with that air conditioner going. And while I'm sitting there freezing to death, God spoke to me. Like I said, haven't you ever gotten ticked off at God? And what he spoke to me, just, I was struggling with it because it was weird. It was just weird. But God spoke to me sitting there on the platform freezing to death. And he spoke to me, and he let me know what he wanted me to tell the people. And so I finally was introduced, got up to speak, spoke like that. And at the end, I said, look, friends, while I was here, the Lord spoke to me. And I made it as clear as I could that, you know, that God spoke. And I said, look, I don't understand what this is, because God really had been talking to me about not saying about anything about money at all. I said, but today I need to say something about money. And I said, how many people here, and there were only 11 people there, okay, how many people here would pray? Now, I don't want you to do anything else. I don't want you to give. Just pray. Pray that through some other means, God would provide $1,000 for this project. How many of you would commit to that for this next week to pray? Three hands went up. Okay, fine. Three hands. That's all right. I was okay with that because I thought it was weird. I felt odd saying it anyway. And three hands go up. I'm satisfied with three because I don't want to say it again. And all right, three hands. Great, wonderful. So church is over, and we went back to the pastor's house, and we're going to have lunch. And I don't even remember which pastor it was now. I'm sure he's still around someplace. But anyway, went to his house for lunch, and the pastor had a mechanic in his church that he thought could get my car started. And so the mechanic went over to the hotel, motel, and tried to get the car started. Wouldn't get started. He would come back every once in a while to give us a progress report. And we were, you know, eating through lunch. The pastor the day before, when I had seen him before we went to the motel, had shown me his new car. Now, it was a new car for him. It was a used car, but it was a new car for him. And he was so proud of that new car for him. You know, it had power, everything. Nice car. I couldn't tell you what it was, but a great big nice car. And he was, you could tell he was really, really proud of that car. And so he'd shown me that, and this mechanic is going back and forth and not getting the car started. And finally, there was a part that he needed to have to get it started. And he couldn't find anybody that was open to get the part from. And he said, look, we're just not going to be able to get it started today. He said, I don't know what you're going to do, but we're just not going to get this started today. So I called the pastor out at Pratt, Kansas, okay? And you know where Pratt is, not very far from here. But out of Pratt, Kansas, and told him, look, this is the situation. It doesn't look like we're going to have the car until tomorrow. It doesn't look like I'm going to be able to get there. And the pastor said, look, if there's anything that you can possibly do to get here, please try to get here. And I thinking to myself, poor guy, I can't get together a sermon. I've got a problem here, you know. And this guy's, you know, he's giving me some little bit of grief here. I can't get there. How am I going to get there? So I told the pastor what the situation was. And the guy came back in and didn't have the car started yet. And the pastor pulled out his keys of that new car to him. And you could tell the Lord was dealing with his heart too. Because you could tell by the look on his face and the way he said things, he didn't want to let me use that car. He really didn't want me to use that car. But he said, here, take my car. And I said, are you sure? I said, I'll go 1,000 miles before I'm able to get back here. He said, no, go ahead, take it. So I called the pastor out in Pratt, said, okay, look, we're gonna try to make it. But I'm not sure, it's 200 miles from Cherryvale to Pratt, and I don't know. Now, confession's good for the soul and bad for the reputation. You know that, don't you? So I'm not confessing to anything about speed limits or anything like that. I'm not confessing to anything, but I can hint. Let's put it this way. That car will do 100, okay, on the back roads of Kansas. And I had Luke in the car, and we were, it truly had power, everything. And we went through the roads and got there, and 45 minutes late at the church. And the pastor had told me, you know, this was before cell phones, and so before I left, he told me, please, if you can possibly get here, make it. And I called him before I left and told him, okay, I'm coming. I said, but there's no way I'm going to make it on time. So I pulled into the parking lot there in Pratt and ran into the church, Luke in tow, put Luke in the back pew over on the side, and told the people right there, please watch him for me. Don't let him do anything. And now, Luke, you be good, you know. And so he sat back there, and I figured he'd be okay with people helping him there. And then I went squishing up the aisle. You know how when your feet are wet, you know, your shoes are, and you go that squish, 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 squish. So that's what I was making my way up to the platform, because I was still soaked to the skin, hadn't had a chance to change clothes or anything. And so I squished my way up to the platform, sat down on the platform furniture. Wasn't there, couldn't have been there 2 seconds. And the pastor got up and he said, okay. He said, I told Brother Larry that we're going to just keep this service going until he gets here. And so Brother Larry, come and share your heart. And so boom, like that, I'm in the pulpit preaching and did my very best. But I'm here to tell you, it's hard to be spiritual when your underwear are wet. You know, hey, any of you ever found that out? Pastor, you ever figured that out? I did my best and then sat down in the furniture up on the front. And I thought to myself, oh, thank God this day's over with. And sat there, and the pastor got up and he said, I'm pretty sure Brother Larry has no understanding of why I was so insistent for him to come, even though all the problems with his car and all that. And I thought to myself, you got that right, buddy, you know. And he says, but he said, our church hasn't been doing much for missions, and we haven't done very, very well at all. And so the board got together, and we decided this last week in our board meeting that we would have to do something big to kind of shake us to the place we would do something great for God. And he said, and so we decided to write a check for Brother Larry's project in Bangladesh. And so Brother Larry, come and receive this check for $3,000. In the morning, three hands went up, and yes, we'll pray and ask God to give you $3,000 or $1,000 each from each person that would believe him for $1,000. And in the evening service, there was a check for $3,000. Now, friends, that got my attention. That got my attention because the letter asking my close friends was in the back of my car still. It was in Cherryvale. And God began to bless in incredible ways. Now, somebody help me because I can't see the clock. I got 2 minutes. Okay. Where am I going in 2 minutes? Because I got 20 minutes of stories to tell. Anyway. Okay. I think this will get us back on track here. Okay, a little bit time later, still we hadn't gotten very far at all in the projects, and God spoke to me. Okay, now one of the clearest things about whether or not God really spoke to you is, did it happen? Did it happen? And you can say all you want to about God spoke to you or did whatever, said whatever and all that, but did it happen? The Lord spoke to me about three things. And one of the things that you can tell about whether it was God that spoke or not was, does he just speak once and then remain quiet? Or does he continue to deal with you, continue to talk with you, to continue to bring up the issue time and again, sometimes in ways that you would never even understand, but somehow God speaks to you and he begins to bring things together. Well, during that time, the Lord spoke to me. And I didn't even tell Sharon. Didn't tell anybody. Because the things that God spoke to me at that time were so outlandish that I was having a hard time believing in myself. But anyway, God spoke to me. There was three things. One of them was that we were to believe God for 100 church buildings in Bangladesh in 5 years. Now, you've got to remember, that was back in the days when we only had 12 churches. We didn't even have 100 congregations. But somehow we were to believe God for the money for these churches in 5 years. Well, that was big enough. But then I was to believe God for a youth hostel. A youth hostel was people from the villages that didn't have schools out in their village areas could come to a central location in a larger town, and they could come there to live in the hostel and go to school. And so we needed to build a hostel. In fact, the Bangladesh Assembly of God asked me if we could possibly raise that money, but the Lord spoke to me about that clearly. And we were supposed to build a youth hostel. Well, the youth hostel was going to cost $150,000. We already had the $50,000 project. And so it's like, how, God? This is just, this is ridiculous. It's just way too much. And the third thing that I was to believe God for was a Bible school. I could see that no strong work anywhere in the world had gone forward without a Bible school. So those three things, 100 church buildings, land and church buildings, and each one of them cost $10,000. Do the math on that one. Huge, just absolutely huge. And then the youth hostel, $150,000. The Bible school, we had no clue what the Bible school was going to cost for the land and for the building. But somehow God dealt with me, and he kept bringing it up, irritating me with the whole thing. And we did the best we could. And then there was a man that raised money. In fact, he was one of the biggest money raisers in the Assemblies of God at that time. That called me on the phone. He was here in the States, and we were in Bangladesh. He called me on the phone, and he said, we have been raising money for buildings, for churches in Bangladesh. We'd said something to him a little bit personally, and he had raised money for five churches. And he said, could we bring the people out that gave money for the church and see those churches? I learned a long time ago, if you're going to say we're going to do it, you better do it, because somebody's going to want to come and see it. And so, okay, sure, they can come out. So there was a couple, husband and wife couple, that had pastored in Oklahoma for many, many years, and they were retiring, and they had given money for two churches. That's $20,000. And they wanted to see those two churches. Okay. And then there was a young businessman that had given money to different projects, and he wanted to see what he had done. And so altogether, there were five. There was a pastor from Texas that had given money, $10,000, for another church. And so this evangelist said, can we come and see him? Okay, come. I said, now it's going to be a hard trip. I said, because you're not giving me enough time to take it easy, because he was only going to be there a few days. And to go where the churches were was out in the village areas, and we had to travel all the way. We got up 6 o'clock in the morning, and we didn't get back until 1 o'clock in the morning, the next morning. And they came, and I told them, okay. I said, this is going to be a hard trip, because we're going to go as hard as we possibly can in that red vehicle that you have on your shelf. And anyway, that's how we got out there. And so we planned to go out there. And then we told the pastors of those five churches, okay, no tea time. We don't want any tea time. Because tea time doesn't mean tea. It doesn't mean just you're going to have a little tea. It means all the other stuff that goes along with tea time. Cookies and biscuits and stuff called chonachur that you eat. And no tea time. Because I knew it was going to take time. I said, look, we can only come. We can only be there 5 minutes. And we're going to have a dedication service. And we've got a plaque to put on the churches. And then we got to go. And so, okay, the first one we went like a charm. It took us several hours just to get there, 5 or 6 hours just to get there. And we went, and just like clockwork, it all went together. And the pastor had listened and helped us, and no tea time, and we dedicated it and put the plaque in and left, just left, because we didn't have enough time to go to all those five places if we didn't do it that way. Went to the second place, again, just as good as the last one was. And then the third one we went to, pastor hadn't listened to us at all, not a lick. And so we went to that place anyway and found out that he had 100 people sitting in the church building for several hours waiting for us to come, and had tea ready for the people that were, the five of us that were coming, six of us that were coming. And we told him not to do that, and I said, what are we going to do? Because we were behind now time, so we got to do something. And I said, look, let me go talk to the people that were sitting in the church and talk to them. And I said, we can't ignore them. And you guys have tea. You guys put the plaque up, and then we'll leave. And so I did that. I went over to the group of about 100 people, the village people that were in that congregation, and went to them and said, look, you know, we don't have much time here, but isn't it great that God will put on the hearts of these people that have come to give of their own money and build a church here in Bangladesh? It was just a bunch of village people, and I knew they wouldn't be telling anybody anything about all this, and so I said, look, wouldn't it be great if God gave us 100 churches in Bangladesh? And that's the first and only time I'd ever said anything about it at all. Never said anything before. Like I said, I never told Sharon any of this. But I figured the village people, they're not going to be telling anybody about this. And they really never did. But after I was done and was going to go back over to the other guys and get them in the car and go, the young businessman came up to me, tears pouring down his face. And I thought, what? Why? Why are you crying about this? How does this touch your heart more than the other? We've already been to two. Are you crying because we're wearing you out? What's the deal? And he said, look, he said, in the last 4 months as I was getting ready to come on this trip, the Lord spoke to me that we should believe him for 100 churches in Bangladesh. You know how those little hairs come on your on your arm and raise up. That's what happened to me at that point, because God was confirming what he had said to me. As he was telling me this, the man that raised money here in the United States for missions projects also came into that building, and they began to share what had happened. I wasn't meaning to tell him anything. But that evangelist came back to the United States and began raising money for church buildings in Bangladesh. And he would call me every Monday and say, I was just in this church and wherever, someplace, Illinois or Oklahoma or Texas or wherever he was at. And he said, and they raised money for a church in Bangladesh. There was a blizzard in the dead of winter, and he'd gone to a church in southern Missouri, and went to that church and preached. On his way back in Miami, Oklahoma, he got snowed in and couldn't go any further. He was trying to go home because he lives down south in Oklahoma, but got stuck and went into a motel in Oklahoma there, Miami, Oklahoma. He called me up and he says, look, I was just in this church. He said, they're going to build 10 churches in Bangladesh. So God began to do the unusual thing. And then one of the men that was on that trip came up to me and he said, do you need a Bible school? I hadn't said anything to him about Bible schools. I hadn't said anything to anybody about Bible schools. And he said, could you use $1 million? Well, maybe. Pastor, could you use $1 million? You could probably find a way to use it somehow, huh? Yeah. That man raised $1 million for the Bible school. So $1 million came in for the 100 churches, because 10,000 times 100. The young businessman went back and paid himself for the youth hostel, all out of a little trip where we didn't talk about money at all. But God spoke to people's hearts. Friend, God's a good God. Did you lose your job? Have they pared back on your salary in any way? Have things been tough through the COVID deal? God's a good God. Don't ever forget that. And he speaks to us. And the way you know he speaks is he makes it happen. He makes it happen. Don't make up stuff that God could do. Listen to God. Listen to what he's saying to you and make sure it's him. Don't go putting it as a fanfare all over the place and posters up and let's raise money for this and that. No, no, let's listen to God. Let it be God. I have more financial miracle stories than anything. Friends, we're just getting started here, but we're going to close it here. God's a good God. Do you have needs in your life? Do you have financial needs? Do you have needs in what God's doing in your life? Trust him. Learn to trust him. Learn to hear him first and then trust him. Church, let me challenge you. Don't do simple things for God. Do great things for God. Do things that you could never do on your own, that it takes a God to do them. It takes God. We raised money for 100 churches, and we didn't have 100 congregations at the beginning of it. But by the time we raised it all, we had 100 congregations. God's a good God. Let him take care of you. Amen.
This concludes the teaching. Thank you for listening, and we hope you can join us for next Sunday's service with Pastor Steve Raines.